5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to another hour of Tech Talk. It's Stephen Scott back with you once again, and I have my usual troupe of tech talkers with me. One absent this week, though. Yes, Tim Schwartz. I said last week he'd be back with us. I told you guys a lie. I'm so sorry about that because I forgot that our Tim is still on holiday. In fact, he's coming home from holiday today, I believe. So he is just getting back. So this is the miserable part of his holiday where he comes back. But yes, Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet is here. Hello, Robin Christofferson. Lord Robin.
Stephen, hi, how you doing?
yeah, okay, just remind me I'm not a lord. Thank you for that. We have Emails Andy. Emails Andy, hello.
Hello, hello.
And
last week either.
No, you weren't. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I must. I get so confused as to who's here anymore. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's nobody was here last week. It was just me on my own. You can thank me later. But we do have a special guest with us this week. We have a guest with us this week. Sorry, we'll edit that. Sean Preece is with us. Sean Preece.
Hey, I'm here. I'm the stand-in Tim.
Yeah, that's right. You are our British Tim. That's. You're a Brit, Tim. There we are. That doesn't
thank
work.
You. I'll thank you. It's great one. To be here. Beautiful.
Liar.
Beautiful people.
Yes. So, it's lovely to have you here because lots to talk about this week. The funny thing is that, I came to the show with lots of different stories. And, of course, then Microsoft announced the big news about Windows 11. We'll talk about that. We're also awaiting news. In fact, the news may have broken by the time this goes on air. That Samsung are launching a new product as well. I don't know if you heard about this, guys, but Samsung are launching a brand new smartwatch, not with their Tizen operating system like they've done before, but in fact they're working with Google, building their Wear OS into their products now under a new brand called Wear. That is going to be the new name for Wear OS. They've just basically dropped the OS part and they call it Wear.
You can't drop the OS. I mean, I don't know what that is. Where? I need the OS. I'm confused.
Where is my where? Yes, I know. It's a bit confusing, isn't it? But this is what they're doing, right? They're launching this new operating system with Google, and that's what they're going to announce, a new smartwatch. I'll be honest, the smartwatch in itself doesn't really interest me too much. I'm immediately jumping at, right, what is the accessibility going to be like in this? Have they worked on this? I'll be honest, guys, I thought Google would have launched a smartwatch by now. Andy, I think you've been waiting for something like this for a while.
Yeah, we brought this up in our little private chat. But it must be almost 2 years ago that we were talking about Fitbit falling under the Google banner, and I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for some kind of announcement.
Yeah.
Nothing for a possible Pixel Watch, but no. Mm.
Well, that's what I thought, yeah. I thought a Pixel Watch would have. In fact, I almost had it on, I thought, good authority. And I know the year's not out yet, but I almost had it on good authority that was going to happen this year. And it's not materialised, so I don't know what's going on. I don't know what the deal is there with that, but yeah.
Sorry, I was wrong. I should.
Yes, I know that's right. I really need to stop listening to Sean Preece, getting my rumours from there. But no, it's interesting to see what comes of it, and we'll talk about it, of course, next week. But ideally, I'd like to kind of dig into more about what the accessibility features are. The watch itself, yeah, it's another smartwatch, right? I mean, what can they do? good luck to them. even the Apple Watch, as much as I love my Apple Watch, it sits on its little charger in front of me here more than it sits on my wrist. And I don't have much of a use for it. I mean, I love it. It's great that it's accessible. And that's the luxury of the world we're now in, that there are products you can say, yeah, it's accessible, but I'm not going to use it.
Yeah.
And that's even with all the apps that are available in the Apple Watch App Store. And that's going to be the challenge for any Android-based. They just don't have the app ecosystem. So, yeah, good luck to them, though.
Well, it is an interesting time because Google, of course, spent a lot of their I.O. talking about the developer side of things, which, of course, is right, and they should. But we did see a big push towards more development for platforms like this. I think the problem for me with Google is that they come up with a great idea, and then if it doesn't work out, they just get rid of it. Now, some people say that's a good thing. You can argue both sides of that. That's a good thing. They're not, sticking around on a product that doesn't work. It's not Ping for iTunes. or, you know, the iPod. You know, they think, right, well, I mean, the iPod's actually a great example of this. They're hanging, Apple are hanging on to the iPod. Get rid of it. No one's buying it. No one cares about the iPod. Are people buying this thing in 21?
You are.
No,
you
well, are. I bought the classic.
I was going to gloss over that.
I bought the iPod classic, guys, not the iPod.
Even worse.
iPod Touch. I'm not having that touch nonsense in my life. I want clicky wheels. That's what I want. Clicky wheels and accessible menus.
I'm excited because if Google and Samsung get this right with their Wear OS, if they get it right and the developers and app developers take an interest in it, what you said, Robin, about, you know, the Apple Watch and its apps in the App Store, there's nothing. Unless I'm into running or knowing how much water I've drunk, it's barren. There's nothing there. I want WhatsApp. I want, I don't know, Zoom. I want all these apps that the Apple Watch is more than capable of running, but for some reason the developers don't want to use because of probably the Apple walls, the Apple walled garden. I don't know. But with Google, with the Android apps, you don't get that. So the potential for having incredibly useful apps on an accessible smartwatch would be cool.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, no, I think you're right, actually, because in essence, this should be, you know, a developer's dream. They can do what they want on that platform.
Yeah.
Where you don't get as much capability. No, you're right. That's interesting.
Hang on.
Did Sean Preece make a point that was actually valid, sensible, and coherent? I'm confused.
That's it. I'm going home. Goodbye.
Well done. You did very well.
I mean, a case in point is WhatsApp. We do a lot of WhatsApp audio messaging, and if you tap on that notification on your watch, it doesn't play, but it does with iMessage voice messages. So is that a limitation? Like, a, you know, first party gets more preferential treatment to third, or is it just that they haven't taken the time to do that? I don't know. But yeah, those kind of things really make the watch very useful. And
that's a choice on WhatsApp. Send there's no, because other apps can other apps you can record and send messages and listen to audio via it. You know, I think about Just Press Record, or, you know, even the Voicemails app, which again is the first app, if you like. But no, I think it's more a case of they just haven't put it in. That's something which hopefully will change. And I should just at that point, since you brought up WhatsApp, there seems to have been an update to WhatsApp, because I'm now no longer getting the hassle I used to get with, was it PTT Play, that button nonsense. I'm not getting that anymore. I'm able to select a message and just double tap on it and it starts to play again. Although weirdly, the pause button then appears. So it's kind of doing two things at once. There's like a pause button that shows up.
But there's also, if you swipe on again, you've got a speed playback, haven't you? A playback speed.
That's right. Yeah, you've got that now as well.
I can whiz through your rambling messages twice as fast, which is a bonus.
Yeah, that's actually a really good feature, isn't it? Especially my 5-minute rants that I often leave on those things. Let's talk about Windows 11, because it is or has been announced. It's not due out for a while yet. What is it, end of the year? Is that right?
Holidays they're talking about, which obviously means Christmas. Well, October, November, December, probably, well, in time for the holiday season, because they want to provide the OEMs, the third party, you know, laptop makers usually, to a really good run at the holiday gift season with new Windows 11 laptops. But it'll be available for most people to download around that time and in 2022 if they're hardware allows it, which we can talk about.
Yeah, well, that's really a good place to start, I think. I mean, a lot of people are, and I think this is the biggest concern for a lot of people when it comes to Windows 11 is, you know, will my machine run it? And this is a really interesting area, because I'm seeing a lot of people on Twitter saying, you know, I've got a 2017 PC, it's got the latest, you know, everything in it, and yet it's telling me, according to the Microsoft website, it's saying it's not compatible. So there's a bit of confusion out there, but apparently a lot of the devices that are out there will run Windows 11. In fact, someone's already found a way around it, apparently. There's apparently a few workarounds already for people to bypass the challenge of getting onto their device. It's all to do with this thing called TPM, isn't it? It's this, what do they call it? Trusted Platform Module, Sean. Is that the name of this thing?
Yes, it is. And of course, no one's heard of it before any of this, and now eBay's full of them. Hey, buy this TPM. It's like, what? It's only £1,000.
It's like $20 about, you know, 2 minutes ago. Yeah,
exactly right. Yeah, so that's the thing that people are getting worried about. So the TPM, Trusted Platform Module, that is the encryption that takes care of all your encryption and storing of sensitive data. It's a bit like the, you know, the chip in your smartphone for storing your fingerprint. You know, it's very secure. And also, you will need secure BIOS as well. And that makes sure you're booting into a clean version of Windows. It double checks that it's the same as when you first installed it. So no infected files in your drivers or any of the loaders. So those two features are there for security. And actually, you know what? I think it's a good thing. It's one of those things where, you know, like when Apple said, right, no more headphone jacks. That's it. We know what's best. It kind of feels like this is Windows saying, okay, in Windows 8, you needed to use UEFI BIOS as well. It's another security thing, right? And it almost seems like, right, now is the time. We're beefing up the security, so you need these. Now, the problem is not every computer is going to have them. So we're going through that transitional period of people saying, I don't have it. I can't run Windows 11. So there is going to be some hardware heartache with this. But actually, I think it is a good thing because it does help with security. And we've seen so many different, you know, ransomware with millions of dollars and, you know, systems going down that something needs to be done. And this is a case of, okay, now security, we're going to put our foot down, basically.
So, Robin, first thoughts on what Windows 11 is and what it is going to be. How much have you read about that? And what are your kind of initial thoughts on what's coming?
From a visual point of view, it's a really nice refresh. It makes it feel a lot more like macOS. Rounded corners to all the rectangles. Really nice kind of effects that are a bit like the, what were they called, Aero, kind of a glass effect. Apparently, it looks really nice from a visual point of view. So anyone that has eyes that work is really going to like it. There are some cosmetic changes as well. The start menu and the task tray icons are centered at the taskbar at the bottom. The start menu comes up in a centered way. We're getting rid of the tiles, but ads, etc., will still be in there. Recommended apps to download, that sort of thing. So it's mostly cosmetic. If you're thinking that this is a rebuild of Windows 10, for example, from the ground up, it's certainly not that. So hopefully, and we can talk about this a little bit more from an accessibility point of view, you'll get a very similar experience from Windows 10. So if your machine can install it and support it, then you're probably going to be fine with the screen reader that you've got, for example. So mostly cosmetic. We can talk about some of the other kind of nice additions. There aren't that many, though, are there?
No, I mean, I must admit, I kind of went into this. I missed the actual announcement on the day it happened. Because I was just busy doing other things, and I'd gone back to it later, kind of expecting to learn a lot about, oh, this is going to be really interesting. But they kept going on about the start menu, and I thought, you know, who cares about the start menu, right? I just use it to search for an app and hit return, or, you know, Windows R, or, you know, whatever. You know, I don't need to care about the start menu. Visually, I guess this is the point. It may look beautiful, and that's certainly where they seem to have gone with this. You know, and also things like, you know, integration of Teams, although basically what that means is they've put it on the taskbar. I mean, so what, right? I mean, I've already got mine on the taskbar. Does that mean I'm ahead of the game in some way? I don't know. but, you know, I don't doubt they've put a huge amount of effort and work into making this more secure, and there's a lot of under the hood stuff going on. I kind of wish that they had done what Mac did with Big Sur. On the M1 side, when they developed the M1 chip, and that was when they decided to go down that route, they would rebuild the entire OS from the start. I think it's probably time Windows did the same. It feels like it's time to move on and, you know, create a much cleaner, less legacy focused version. ARM is a good way to do that because you have to get new hardware for it to work, so therefore you're essentially doing what Mac did, which was start again. And they could do that, you know, and I'd love to see what Windows would be like working on something like an M1 chip. I know that that won't happen necessarily, but that, you know, that kind of power behind Windows would make it really interesting. But yeah, I mean, it does all seem very visual to me. There was nothing that particularly stood out. I mean, I guess the one thing is Android apps. That was an area which was quite interesting to hear how Android apps themselves are going to be available on this. And what does that even mean, right? I mean, I don't know how that will work. And from an accessibility perspective, that is interesting.
I expect nothing from accessibility. I must admit, Android apps.
I had this experience with Chrome. Now, I know Google Chrome OS is a much younger OS, and its accessibility is growing, and it feels very much like where Microsoft was about maybe 5 or even 10 years ago. But you know, that experience with Windows, sorry, with Android apps on Google Chrome OS was pretty naff. I'm the same. I'm kind of thinking this isn't going to work the same. And what are we expecting from these apps, right? Is it going to be the same as the phone version? So is this kind of trying to replicate what iOS apps on Mac will be like?
There's an app at the moment on Windows 10 called Your Phone, which basically just gives you a window to your Android's phone screen. So it's a bit like remote desktop, really. And it's just pixels that you're looking at. So there's no accessibility there necessarily for us. So hopefully this will be a departure, an improvement on that. We should mention that the App Store, the Windows App Store, which is a bit of a ghost town at the moment, will be augmented by Amazon's App Store, Amazon's Android App Store, because obviously Fire tablets are, you know, it's an Android tablet, and they've chosen that one to include in the Windows 11 App Store rather than Google Play. But yeah, you'll be able to get your Android apps through the main store. And with this kind of promotion to a top level, you know, billing alongside other Windows apps, one hopes that Microsoft has plans to, I don't know, install a version of TalkBack within those, or allow Narrator to be able to, who knows?
How's we'll that all going to work? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't think so.
Yeah, well, there are dev builds out there. If you're in the developer ring and you pay to be a developer and you want to go and find those, it's early days. But so maybe we'll get some answers sooner rather than later. But yeah, there's a big question mark there.
But not only that, in the App Store, you do get also desktop apps. So things like, I don't know, Chrome, Firefox, or NVDA, maybe Jaws, I don't know. But the thing is that no longer do you have to go onto a web browser and Google search for something. It's almost like a trusted source. Do you know what I mean? So I think that's quite handy. And again, it comes down to the security aspect. You know, so how many times have you gone to download something and it's not the actual website, the developer website? It's full of links and you download the wrong thing. And so I think it does help with security. And going back to, it's just visual, right? That's what everyone's concentrating on, the visuals. I agree with that. And Microsoft have done a lousy job in sort of getting across the under the hood differences here. But going back to the CPU and the processor, there's a lot of support for newer processors where they have high performance cores and cores for low performance. And there is some sort of ARM support coming as well. So the actual core of the system has changed, but no idea how much, if it is a total rebuild. Obviously, I don't think it is because it's just a Windows 10 update.
No, it's
basically
not. It's an update, yeah.
But I mean, but that difference in the security aspect of it and the processor of the processors that it's saying, you know what, these aren't compatible. I think there's some interesting stuff going on that we don't know about yet.
Sean's absolutely right. They did talk about improvements in performance, and that's to do with better, you know, CPU management, etc. Hopefully, optimization of code under the hood. It's certainly not Windows Core OS, which is what you were referring to a moment ago, which is their ongoing project to rebuild the hairball that is Windows code to make it much more efficient. And people have been lamenting the fact that things that we've been calling for years hasn't been implemented in Windows 11. Something as simple that's been in the Mac forever as multi-threaded copy and paste. So if you copy a big file from one place to the other on the same SSD, it takes forever because it's just a single-threaded process and there's no checks and balances in there in case there's an error in copying, etc. So there's some real basic stuff that a modern OS should have that they still haven't implemented in this new version.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. Andy, what about you? I know you were all chatting about this last night on WhatsApp. You were chatting about what's working, because I must admit, I've got an HP desktop down here, which I haven't plugged in for a little bit because I don't use it that often. I'm using this other laptop at the minute, the Samsung Galaxy ProBook, which is lovely. But the HP desktop, I kind of have it in my head, it's probably not going to be capable of working with Windows 11.
This is what Sean was asking me about yesterday. Yeah, he asked me about the TPM. Now,
because you've got a, what, you got a Dell, haven't you? Dell's
at I've got a Dell, yeah, that's running the Ryzen 3. And I was reading online to see that Windows, Microsoft have released some kind of tool to see if you can, if there is compatibility with your machine to get Windows 11, but apparently it's very buggy. I'm not sure if Sean's tried this yet or not.
I have. I've tried it. I passed, so I'm happy with it. I don't care if it's buggy or not. It says my computer is fine.
It's the first test he's passed in years.
An ace plus.
Thank you.
The biggest thing I like about it so far, it's free.
Yes, that's true.
Everything that is free is good, surely.
Correct. Well, it's only free if you don't have to buy a new computer. That's the only downside. Yeah, that was the most expensive software upgrade I've ever done. It cost me £1,800. Yeah, that's the thing. That is the thing, isn't it? It's that if you end up having to buy a new machine. But I don't know if this is maybe, and I'm being tentative about this because I fear there's a lot of scare stories flying around. And you know, a lot of people don't realise this TPM thing is quite confusing. Like you said earlier, Sean, you know, people didn't have a clue what this was at all. A couple of days ago, and suddenly that's all everybody's talking about. It's TPM, TPM. And then everyone's, as you know, often the case, everyone's suddenly an expert. It was like the pandemic when it started. Everybody immediately became, you know, an expert on, you know, viruses and everything else. But that's obviously not the case. And, you know, I think with this, it will probably be the case, I imagine, that many devices will run Windows 11. And I imagine, I kind of like it to be the case that Windows 11, if it needs to activate your TPM, it kind of just does it. You know, if you don't, if you have a TPM that's disabled, that perhaps needs to be enabled, that maybe Windows 11 just does that. It recognizes its existence and it just enables it for you. That would be a lot easier, I think, because I'm thinking about this from a blind perspective. Trying to get to the BIOS and change things like that, that's going to be a nightmare. I mean, yeah, you can do it with IRA or Be My Eyes or support, but, you know, it's not easy to do.
That it brings up a good point, actually, why BIOSes are still so inaccessible and never talked about in the terms of accessibility either.
No,
it seems like it's the forgotten about part of it, and it's so important, like this demonstrates. So you could have TPM and it could be disabled. So there's hardware TPM, which is an actual chip on your motherboard, but since 2017, I think it is, all the processors, Intel and AMD, have a TPM software built into their firmware, but that's usually disabled, so you can turn it on. So even if you find that your computer says it's not ready for TPM, it could be a case of just going into the BIOS and turning it on.
And no mention on new accessibility features yet, if there are any coming. We did get a little bit of notification from Microsoft Accessibility this week saying that, you know, there will be an announcement coming on the new features that are coming. Lots of people on my timeline not happy with that at all, saying it should have come out at the same time as the actual announcement. But, you know, bear in mind that from my take on this is that, you know, the software's not due out yet for months, right? We're months away. It's not that you can just go and download it tomorrow. If it was a case of it was downloadable the next day, I'd maybe have some issue with it. But, you know, I think we can allow ourselves, you know, a couple of days to get them to get their ducks in a row. Am I wrong, Robin?
Yeah, early days. Yeah, absolutely. It's not baked by any means. And
doesn't feel that way.
It would have been nice if they'd have mentioned accessibility in the main announcement, but, you know.
Well, no one does. No company does. Well, yeah. You know, even Apple don't really. I mean, Microsoft, I mean, we had a little spate of it for a while, remember, where Microsoft and Apple and Google made reference to disability, but not necessarily in the tools sense of how we use the tools, but more just in an overview of the fact that the company is inclusive and showcases, you know, and at that point would showcase certain tools that would benefit disabled people. But very rarely, I mean, how many times do we all get excited if accessibility is mentioned at an event, from any event?
Yeah. All the time, yeah, it's a big deal. They
mentioned
accessibility because it never happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I think look, it's Windows, so the assumption is that accessibility is going to carry on as it did in Windows 10. So I'm not entirely sure what the new features are going to be. There are some questions about how's the Android apps, as we've already mentioned. Are they going to be accessible? And certain keystrokes for any new features, such as the widgets, how do you get access to that? But you know, my assumption is that it's going to work anyway.
They're not going to launch it without Narrator, right? I mean, it's not going to be like suddenly Narrator's in the bin along with Skype and whatever else they're binning.
Exactly. And Jules and NVDA and other screen readers are going to have access to the insider build, the developer build beforehand to cover any, just like they did with Windows 8 and Windows 10.
But if you're expecting an announcement from those companies, you can forget it because you know, that's all going to be under NDA. That's not going to be something that's discussed for months yet. And quite rightly so, because they have to fix these things. And look, we all remember Windows 10. We all remember the disaster that was Windows 10. Some would even say Windows 8 was a similar disaster. You know, I remember Windows 10 and the whole issue with Microsoft Edge. Remember that? In the days when people used to say Windows Edge was the worst browser in the world. Don't touch it. And I remember covering it on air and saying, you know, how terrible Windows 10 was, or at least that was the view of people, because Microsoft Edge, they were trying to push us to, didn't work with JAWS, fundamentally did not work, because JAWS didn't have access to the, or Vespero, I should say, was the company who owned them, didn't have the access that they needed at the time, and therefore couldn't quickly respond. Because bear in mind, you can't just, you know, toss out a new update. It takes time to build this stuff up, right? So, you know, I think that we just need a little bit of patience here. It will happen. We'll get the information. I think there are bigger things in the world to worry about at the moment, you know, and get annoyed about. And I'm all for that. You know, let's debate serious things. Let's not get worried about a press release that hasn't come out. Okay, so let's move on, because there's actually other stuff I want to talk about today. Obviously, Windows 11 is the big story of the week, but I did mention earlier about Samsung and their launch of a new device, a new smartwatch. This is actually happening at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, which I imagine this year is probably virtual again. I don't know for definite. I usually go to or try to get to Mobile.
It is. It started. Yeah.
Right, okay, so it's all virtual again. I remember trying to get there. The first year I was trying to get there, that's when the pandemic started. That wasn't my fault. I mean, it's just that's...
Suspicious, though.
It just seems a bit odd. Yeah, you never saw me and the virus in the same room, did you? But yes, so... But actually, what's interesting is, so we've got that event happening. We're going to talk about it more in the next couple of weeks. But here is our very own TFL, Technology for Life man, Mark Evans. He is talking about wearables, what they are, and how they can benefit us as blind people.
Hi, Mark Evans here, RNIB Technology for Life. Thank you for the introduction, Stephen. Yes, today we're looking at or talking about one of my favourite topics, which is wearable technologies. This has seen a huge amount of development over the last couple of years. What do I mean by a wearable technology? Well, literally a piece of technology you can either put on your head, your wrist, your leg, to help you in a form of way of navigation or to be able to do a particular job for you. Specifically, what I want to talk to people about today is there are new devices on the market, new headwear, VR technologies and glasses to help us. The first one is called InVision glasses and is priced at £2,695 at the time of recording, which is a lot of money. This is distributed by Sight and Sound. They are glasses that work on what we call haptic, so dynamic touching and swiping, and they will actually speak and give back information, which is fantastic. I've seen these demoed. I can't wait to get my hands on a pair of these. Next ones are produced or sort of sold by a company called VisionAid Technologies. And obviously we've helped give feedback to these guys as well. And there are a couple of different devices available. The first one is called the Iris Vision. And again, these prices may well change, but you can find this on there through these guys on their website, £2,895. Again, goes over the head, will enable us to magnify, will enable us to watch TV, listen to music, see, you know, recognise faces in greater detail. We've got to obviously have some residual sight to be able to use this, whereas the first set with the glasses, you will have to, you know, have less sight because it's greater with the haptic and speech feedback. Obviously, one-to-one training is given on all these devices, and they'll tell you what the guarantees and warranties are. It's very important you know that. You do also have an option to get the iris reader to do text to speech feedback as well. So go check them out. The others that were very impressive that I saw again from VisionAid in their presentation were the AceSight VR headset and also the eSight VR headset. Now the eSight is very expensive, very high end. Comes with a halo piece and is very, very cushioned and very tactical. You can wear them with glasses underneath and still wear over, where a lot of the others are, you're advised to obviously take glasses off. But they would also, you know, talk you through in relation to the level of sight you've got, which device would be the best suited for you. You'd have a complete sight test with whatever option you went for from any of these companies. So that is wearable technology. It will help you do a whole range of different tasks. They do also offer price plans and payment schemes, because we are talking about substantial amounts here. But at least it's nice to know that this type of technology is now being able to be used by us, and it's not just for mainstream and for able-bodied. It is designed for us. They are catering for our needs. Obviously, if you want to find out more, if you want me or the team to go through any details with you, you can contact us via 0303 123 9999, or you can email us tfl@rnib.org.uk. We'll be happy to discuss, inform, give you our opinions and send you the details. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Mark. Mark Evans there from the Technology for Life team, talking about the range of specialist wearables that are out there. Obviously, we're talking today about the Samsung announcement and, you know, what will be from that. We look forward to telling you more. But there are a lot of options out there. I mean, some very pricey, guys. I mean, let's be honest about it. Some of these are very pricey items. But they do have some amazing features. I mean, I think eSight, for those who can benefit from it and those who have spoken to who've had them, eSight, for example, a brilliant product, can actually change people's lives.
Yeah, where it uses the AR to detect the edges of objects, the edges of people, and to highlight them in a high contrast way, and to make the sort of central focus of your useful vision the bit, you know, it brings to, say, for example, the left corner of your eye where you can see best. It can put that as the sort of front and center of the image that you're looking at. So really clever stuff.
Yeah. Stick around. We've got lots more to talk about on Tech Talk. We'll also have an announcement from Robin. An announcement from Robin all about Spillage and Aisle 3. No, he'll have an announcement for us all about an event that's coming up. He wants you to attend. Better not be on the same time as this show, as it always tends to be. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first, we are going to catch up with four wonderful people. Actually, it might be five, if I'm right. So I'm terrible at counting, terrible at mathematics. But I have got with me now Louise, Aniba, and I've got Trish and Amy as well. And they're all going to tell us about a fantastic group that they've put together during the pandemic. You know, the challenge, of course, for many people was losing that contact and also losing the ability to do things that perhaps people wanted to do. Now, for Aniba, for Louise, and for Trish, it was learning Braille. That's what they wanted to do. And Chantal, who's an RNIB volunteer, decided to put together a group. Amy Woodward is the RNIB Connect person who brought everyone together through RNIB, which was absolutely brilliant. Well, they all join us now on the line. Chantal, start with you. So tell us, why did you decide to start the group?
I taught Braille at a place called Warview House in Stockport. But obviously due to the pandemic, that had to stop, and I was thinking, you know, I'm so good and we'll go away for me to teach jail. And a lady from the company got in contact with me and said, would you mind supporting me remotely? I'm doing a rehab course and need to learn jail. So I was like, yes, sure. And then I got in contact with Amy and said, oh, actually, have you ever thought of setting up a remote jail group online so that people don't have to travel, but they still have that opportunity if they're using their site to learn jail? It just went from there, really, Stephen.
That's amazing. And, you know, that's the thing. It's having the idea. And, Amy, I guess it's then the challenge is on you to figure out, right, how do we make this happen?
Yes. It was quite convenient because Chantal came to me and had this idea. And about the same time, I had a group that we were supporting anyway through RNIB that a few of the members were saying how they missed their face-to-face Braille sessions. And it just fit together quite serendipity almost, wasn't it, that they came together at the same time And as you say, it was a lot of trying to figure out the best way forward, but we had some support. Chantelle had a lot of great ideas coming forward.
Sorry to interrupt, Jamie, but also the head of jail technical officer gave us a hand because I'm quite good friends with James Bowden, and he kind of helped us set up the group, gave us Jaegers in the right direction.
Yes, so I was going to say that we have had support from other teams within RNIB as well. And as Chantelle just said, our colleague James from the Braille team has been wonderful. He's been a really brilliant support, helping to get things set up and helped point us to some resources as well to help with the group.
So let's meet some of the group and some of the pupils, if you like, of this class, which sounds fantastic. And I have so many questions for all of you here. Aniba, Louise and Trish are also with us. Aniba, let me start with you. Why did you decide to get involved with this group? You already volunteer for RNIB, I understand. But what made you get involved in this?
The reason why I wanted to get involved in this was because I wanted to learn a new skill due to the lockdown. Most of all, as well, I wanted to upgrade my Braille on QAC when I left QAC. And when I left the Hive as well, I was looking into Braille. I couldn't find Braille then, but then since Amy said, "Ooh, we might have someone to do Braille for us," and I was like, "Yes, let's ask this person, can she do Braille?" And since then, it's been fantastic for me because I'm not only having Braille on a Monday, I'm also having extra support on Chantelle on a Thursday as well.
So in your case, Aniba, it was about upgrading your Braille, I guess getting back in, literally in touch with it. Louise, what about you? What was your reason for joining?
My main reason for joining was because I'm losing my sight due to retinitis pigmentosa, and I'm on various medications for other conditions, mainly arthritis-based. I wanted to make sure I could read my medications boxes, because that's something that, you know, if you're losing your sight, and you want to make sure you're taking the right medications. So that was my initial motivation for wanting to learn Braille. But of course, it will be useful for so many other things as well. And I asked Amy quite a while ago whether it was possible to have Braille lessons, and the opportunity arose while we were during lockdown, so it's absolutely perfect timing. And of course, with us all isolating and not being able to go out for Braille lessons, trying it over Teams, Microsoft Teams, it's worked wonderfully well, much better than I think we thought it would do. And Chantelle is an amazing teacher. We all have strengths and weaknesses in different areas, and Chantelle is very good at picking up on all of those and helping us where we need help and giving us stretch activities for those of us who maybe want to leap ahead in a specific area.
Okay, Trish, what about you?
Well, I desperately wanted to learn it because, like Louise, I'm on considerable amounts of medication, but I got as far as the egg box routine with ping pong balls in, and I thought, well, my memory problems are such that, you know, I forget what I was actually doing, and I thought, well, the only way I'm going to get past this is to actually learn it properly. And thanks to Chantelle, because my health isn't brilliant, she's helped me considerably, and the course itself is lovely, and it keeps you going. It's very varied, and I say my first enjoyment was actually reading a Lemsip box off a supermarket shelf, actually reading the word Lemsip in Braille, and since then travelling out in the daughter, we've gone places where they've actually got Braille in the lift, and I've been able to let them know whether the Braille's correct or not, because it's quite surprising how in some of the lifts it's not. So for me, I'm enjoying actually discovering where Braille's being used everywhere, places, everyday places. So and I'm just enjoying it.
It's really interesting because you obviously are all passionate about learning this and using it in a really productive way. I know myself, when I learned Braille again, it was, you know, reading the paracetamol box and actually thinking, oh, that's how you spell the word paracetamol. I remember that was what kind of rolled through my head at the time. Because for years I had it wrong in my head. You know, the importance of literacy comes up time and time again, doesn't it, when it comes to Braille and the conversation about the need for Braille. You know, there are lots of ways we can consume our content these days. We can do it through audio. We can listen to, you know, books or get large print if we have some sight left. But for some of us, obviously, losing our vision getting worse, the challenge is keeping up to date, learning new words, remembering words as well. Like I say, you know, words I could spell years ago, no problem, like receipt. Now I'm thinking really hard about that word as the letters are disappearing. Louise, if I ask you first, perhaps, you know, what has been that transformation for you? What has Braille meant for you?
It's meant a few things, really. I mean, apart from learning a new skill, which is challenging, but really, really exciting. It's sort of given me, you know, new goals, new levels of achievement to reach in that. And I'm feeling the grey cells in my brain working again, and they haven't for a little while, I don't think. So a sense of achievement is really, really good. And we've come a long way in a very short space of time. But also I have some Braille books here to read, and to be able to pick those up and, you know, try reading those. Now I'm learning how to read Braille. That's amazing, really, and something I couldn't do, you know, a few months ago when we started the course.
Trish, where do you stand on that? I mean, how did you feel learning, you know, for that first time, as you say, going to be getting that experience of picking something up that had Braille on it and being able to identify it? You know, what was the time period in that?
It was quite quick, actually. As I say, Chantelle's really good at getting it over and practicing it. That's the thing. I'm almost jealous of Louise that she's got a book. I haven't. So I'll have to work on getting one to practice with other than the coursework. But picking up that box, I mean, I was like a little kid that had won a prize for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, look at this, you know. I phoned up my mum and told my mum about it as well. So for me to go from not being able to figure it out at all to reading that box, and it was relatively quickly, because the course itself engages you. It really is what I call a good course. I mean, I don't know who actually designed the book itself, but Chantelle used it really well.
Yeah, and a good trainer makes all the difference, frankly. I mean, I've been through the course myself, and I've been through it with a trainer, and there is a difference. There really is. Aniba, from your point of view, and you've all cited this, that, you know, additional challenges, not just sight, but additional challenges have made it difficult, even if you wanted to perhaps go out and actually do a course in person. The pandemic's been a terrible time for so many people, but there has been this use, this move towards a use of this kind of technology, like we're talking here on Microsoft Teams. Has that helped, do you think, actually make opportunities available to you that perhaps you might not have been able to get access to before?
I would say it's been very useful doing it online as well, because I will say as well, Chantelle has been fantastic, because if I have a question, I know I can contact Chantelle as well, because she hasn't just been a fantastic Braille person, but she's also been a friend as well.
And that's key, isn't it? This is a social thing. It is about learning Braille, but you're making friends with each other as well. And that's important for you all, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think there's support among all of us. Sorry, Trish.
No, I was going to say, being isolated during the pandemic, four walls can get to you really badly.
Mm.
Not having that person to talk to, and Louise is great. She's kept me on course, I'm sure she has.
you know. It's amazing to say. I think we all support each other, don't we? And we have have a lot of laughs as well. And I mean, there's quite a bit of humour written into the actual Braille course. You know, every now and then we have a line that we read when we figured out what we're reading, you know, something that Bill does and something that Jane does. We think, oh no, not keen on that, Bill, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. And but also that one amazing. And also the fact that we've been loaned some Perkins Braillers. So we're not only are we learning the formations of the cells for Braille and learning to read the Braille, we're also typing the Braille. And we could never have done that on our own if we were just trying to learn Braille under our own steam. So having a teacher who's so supportive, and having Amy coordinating it all, and having, you know, the books, I mean, and the actual Braillers, we've got everything we need to, and supporting each other. We all help each other along. So, and we have a laugh as well. So it's all good.
So, you know, Chantel, there are a few people up and down the country, not as many, I think, as we would like, perhaps, but there are a lot of people up and down the country who are able to teach Braille. What would you say to them about setting up a similar group in their area? Do you think they should push for it and get involved with RNIB, perhaps, to make it happen?
Well, yeah, because it depends what people want to achieve. I mean, yes, I gain now because of the pandemic, it being actually time for remote learning to take place. But I always say, I mean, when I go all the way back in primary school, I was very lucky to have our local VI resource centre right next door to my school, and I was very lucky to have the specialist support teacher who came in once or twice a week to give me that support, whereas now it's very hard to come by. So I think the more remote Braille groups that have been set up, the better. And also, if this group works out really, really well, I am hoping to set up another one in the northwest, for example, so it's a bit nearer to home, so I can physically meet the people and go after the course.
That's brilliant, right? So there's more opportunities here. So Chantel is taking over the UK on Braille learning. This is fantastic. This is great. I mean, we need this. We've got to get more classes out there because there aren't enough. There just aren't enough.
Sorry to interrupt, Stephen, but may I just say, I don't know how you feel about this, but I always say to people, who better keeps VI people than VI people themselves? It's not just about learning Braille, picking up a book, or that. There's loads of things, you know. For me, for example, I use the Orbic Reader 20 with my phone because I can't use a physical touch screen because of the CP. So in that respect, you know, it's not just about, oh, it's hard copy Braille, or it's all the Braille technology. And that in itself, for those once people have learned Braille, can open up a whole new world.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the key, isn't it? That's the key that, you know, it gives us... you're right, it's one thing to learn. We could all learn by getting the fingerprint course and going from there, but it's much more than that. And I certainly found that with my Braille class, that there were a lot of things along the way. I remember someone telling me, the trainer actually telling me on the day, you know, just be careful if it's a cold day, wear gloves, because you don't want your hands to be too cold. Otherwise, you'll have difficulty reading. And it didn't even occur to me that cold hands would, of course, impact on your ability to read if you were freezing cold. So, you know, just little things that people can hit you with. You're not going to get that in the book. You're not going to get that from a sighted trainer. Amy, let me come to you because you obviously were involved in setting up the sort of logistics of all of this. How difficult was that? And if you were advising someone listening who's thinking, oh, Microsoft Teams, that sounds like a nightmare, and how do I do all that? Is that something that RNIB can support?
Yes, so this is, we set it up as a pilot project, this group, and because it has been so successful, we're hoping to widen it out to other areas. And as Chantel said, she's looking to do another group. And I think the advantage of doing it on Teams was this group wouldn't have been able to come together if we hadn't done it as a remote group, because the logistics of finding someone who has the time and the ability to teach in such a way as Chantel has done and marrying that up with the people who are wanting to learn. We couldn't have done this face-to-face even without the pandemic because of the distance between the two. So having it as a virtual group has been a real advantage in cutting down waiting times and linking people together who wouldn't normally be linked together. So that's been an advantage. And I think now that we have a way that's set with the using the fingerprint and having some lone brailers and things like that, it should be fairly easy to copy and replicate in other places so that we can help more people learn Braille.
Brilliant. Well, listen, I wish you all the best with it. Chantelle, you're doing a great job with the training. Keep it up and do take over the country when it comes to Braille teaching, because that's what we need. Aniba, Louise, Trish, I'm glad you're getting so much out of it. I'm behind you on this 100% because we need more people knowing Braille. It's so important for literacy. It's so important just for those little tasks, labelling things around the home, being independent, being able to read information that comes up that you want to read privately. We may never sit down and read War and Peace in the back room on a Sunday, but, you know, at least we can get to a level where we can all enjoy reading independently or finding information out independently, which is key. And Amy, of course, fantastic job as always, as you do as a community connection coordinator at RNIB. Thank you for your work you do as well. It's been great talking to you all. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Email. We get email. Get your email every day.
Every day.
Here's your mail today.
Always feels like the start of a kids' show whenever we play that for some reason. Okay, first off, thanks to the guys at the Remote Braille Group. Well done for what you've done, and also great work from Amy Woodward, the Community Connection Coordinator in the Midlands and East England. And you can find out lots more by calling RNIB's helpline for more details on how you can get involved with RNIB, 0303 123 9999. Listen, a quick word to Robin Christofferson before we jump straight into the emails. Robin, tell us about your event that's coming up, because if you don't tell us about it, you'll start crying, and I don't want that.
Well, thank you very much. AbilityNet as a whole will cry, so I have to.
Oh, the whole organisation. Wow, that's quite a lot of responsibility on my shoulders,
tears,
Robin.
A lot of tears.
Yeah.
So, as per usual, each month I talk to another kind of luminary in the accessibility field. It's Richard Morton, who's head of accessibility at CDDO, the Central Digital Data Office. It's the place in government that, get this, proactively monitor, report on, and even fine inaccessible websites. Ooh. Thanks to the public sector regulations that have come into effect, they are actually doing something about it proactively rather than relying on organisations like the RNIB to champion civil cases of blind individuals or groups of individuals. So yeah, I'm going to be asking him, amongst other things, how many sites he'll be reporting on, how he chooses them, and, you know, what's going to happen as a result. Obviously, they're already doing this, but there hasn't been any kind of formal reporting yet. So let's see what I can tease out of him. It's next Tuesday. That's the 6th of July at 1 p.m. So yes, there's a clash with this broadcast.
Scheduling,
but, you know, sign up for it. You don't have to listen to it or watch it on the day. You can,
hey, that's my line.
Sorry. You can catch up on it afterwards if you've registered. So yeah, if you go to abilitynet.org.uk/CDDO-webinar, or just search for Accessibility Insights in your web browser, then that'll come up as well.
Is that the same Richard Morton who used to work at Samsung?
Oh, I don't know.
Because that would be interesting, because if it is, question number one,
well.
What a great, yeah, there you go. Ah,
oh, a segue.
Yeah, I can come up with
free
questions.
Watch piece. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Well, if it is the same guy, they've got a great guy there. That's all I'm saying, because he's fantastic.
He is a good egg.
Okay, right, let's get to those emails then. Andy, what have you got?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we featured an interview with Sky Q, didn't we, Stephen?
Mm. Yes, so we had Fraser Sterling, I think, was on from Sky.
So we've got a little bit of feedback from that, a couple of emails that we can get to. Stop being so nice, says Alan. Hi, gang. Great to have Sky Q now talking to me, but what about some reality and challenging their representative instead of just allowing him to regurgitate his PR script? It had a flavour to me of how kind of you to give us this. So Alan's come up with a few points. How many years has it taken for Sky to do this? If accessibility is so important to them, then why was it not included as a design spec from day one? AD on catch-up and boxed sets is a laugh. I've been complaining to them about this for many, many years, way back when there's in their Sky Plus days. So don't hold your breath, anyone. They've gone backwards in some ways. So the old Sky Plus app could control the box, while the new Sky Go app could not do anything with the box except manage recordings and, of course, play the program on my phone. And this is important since the apps were accessible using VoiceOver, so we could have control without having our domestic partners having to listen to all the same talking verbiage. They provide accessible remote control for Sky Q, but this is the same control that they provided for previous versions, so not wireless, a line of sight only. And it does not have a microphone like the standard remote. I would have thought that this is pointing the remote and talking commands would be an important accessibility issue. The talking guide is good, but it still needs some work, e.g. echoing the numbers when entering digits for channel selection. While I'm on a roll, what about following up with issues? After your initial flurry about accessible smart meters, there's been no follow-up regarding whether or not they've been actually made accessible by energy companies after their initial announcements. I am with Bulb Energy, and since I contacted them a few years ago and they informed me that their meter supplier did not make any accessible meters, they were seeking alternatives, there's been silence. Am I alone in this? That's an email from Alan Milne.
Okay, well, Alan, first off, we did tackle, I think, pretty well the issues around Sky and no AD on-demand services, and also pushing them for further updates on when more accessibility would come. We can only ask the questions. We don't necessarily always like the answers, though, do we? That's the problem. And as for smart meters, you know, this is something we have talked about quite a lot, and we have discussed. In fact, we've had the company, is it Geo, Robin? It's Geo, isn't it? The company that have made the accessible smart meter. We've had them on a few times talking about that. So, yeah, there is an accessible smart meter out there. But, you know, what RNIB's take on this is that you must contact your supplier and ask the question. It may be the case the supplier comes to you, but it's more likely you're better going to them to ask the question, you know, have you got an accessible in-home smart meter, and get the information from there. Keep your email...
I want to say something.
I know, but there's no time. And there's no time. We only have the hour. Listen, thank you so much for coming on, Sean. I appreciate you being on. You must come back. Also to Robin, thank you so much for coming on. Yes, exactly. Hold that thought. emails, Andy, thank you. We'll be back again next time for another Tech Talk. Keep your emails coming. I promise we'll get to more of them next week. Tech Talk at rnib.org.uk. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.